So can you hear it?
I don't hear anything, no. Oh, go ahead.
I just wondered, you should be able to hear it with your...
I can hear it in here. Yes.
Okay. Okay, then that's it.
All right. Today is April 23rd, 2005. I am Elizabeth Evans, and I'm interviewing Virginia Kaler Richardson, who was a Peace Corps volunteer in Nyasaland/Malawi, serving in an education project from October 1962 through December 1964. Can you give your name and current address, please?
Sure. It's Virginia Richardson, 8405 Cedar Hills Drive, Dexter, Michigan, 48130.
Great. Can you think back to a year or so before you joined the Peace Corps and talk about what you were doing then, your childhood, your education, or some other relevant experience before becoming in the Peace Corps?
Sure. I was finishing up my master's degree in English literature at the University of Chicago. I had gotten a BA in mathematics and switched over to English literature, and I actually had no idea what I was going to do. I've often looked back on those times and thought to myself, I never had a sense of making a decision about my life. I clearly did, but I didn't have any sense of it. And at that point, I started going out with David Kaler, who was looking for all sorts of different ways of getting out of the country. He had actually taken Portuguese because he wanted to go to Brazil.
Really?
And so he thought, you know, going into the Peace Corps would be a good idea. And his offer of marriage was, why don't we go into the Peace Corps together? So, you know, I thought that was a pretty good idea.
Great idea.
And we got married, and we had put in applications. And David was convinced that we would be going to Latin America. And instead, we got the statement that we had been selected for Nyasaland. And, you know, the same sort of, where is that? Actually, because I grew up in Canada, I had heard, we had studied the Rhodesias and the Nyasaland, so that I knew it was in Africa.
Oh, good
at the very
for you.
Least.
You were ahead of the rest of us.
And immediately contacted my parents, and oh, sure, they knew Nyasaland. And so we got married and went into the Peace Corps. In the meantime, the Peace Corps office realized that, in fact, I wasn't a citizen, so we had to do a very crash course for me to become a citizen.
Really?
I had said it on my form, but I don't think anybody noticed it, and then noticed it a little late. So,
really?
I was excited because I was going to be a teacher from the time of age of four. And so I thought this would be a very fascinating, interesting thing to do.
So when everybody asks you, why did you join the Peace Corps, that's your answer, is it, that you wanted to teach?
No, that wasn't my answer. I mean, that was fine. I was going to teach somewhere. But I think it was for the adventure. And because I'd be going into the Peace Corps with David.
Wow. So how did you first hear about the Peace Corps?
I think from President Kennedy. I had heard of it before David mentioned it. I didn't think I could go in because I wasn't a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think too much about it, but it sounded pretty exciting. I was in Hyde Park at the time, and it was full of beatniks, people who never smiled and sort of put the world down, pretty much. And the Peace Corps was not, for them, politically correct, because it was structured and organized and government and everything like that.
So you really didn't have any specific country or project in mind?
Nope, I really didn't.
So what was the reaction of your friends and family when you were accepted?
Well, as I say, the Hyde Park people thought, oh, well, why are you doing that? You know, that's government. It's people will be telling you what to do. So that was the one side of it. My parents were fine with it. We had grown up in a different country in Canada, so they understood the notion of traveling and seeing a different country. And actually, because they had grown up in Canada, knew Nyasaland and Rhodesian Nyasaland, so, and had cousins who had gone to South Africa, and so they were perfectly
okay
with it. So it
wasn't really a foreign idea to them.
Not at all. And my brother joined the Peace Corps the very next year. So,
great. So after you were invited to join the Nyasaland Mulali Project, how did you prepare yourself to go?
I got a haircut and and a permanent.
You thought it would last 2 years?
I don't know what I thought. Did a lot of packing because we had to get out of our various two places in Hyde Park, and went back and stayed with my parents for a couple of weeks before we went to Syracuse, because they live very close to Syracuse. And looked at the maps, looked at the history of Nyasaland and that sort of thing. But that's it. Mm-hmm. Nothing more than that.
Well, you don't really know what to expect. So when you got to training, what did you think about training faculty and the syllabus and what other trainees were doing or where they were from and what the language training was about?
Well, I got a sense of what they were trying to do. They were trying to cut, in a sense, I mean, I knew the psychological notions of what they were trying to do, which is to cut off our identities from our past identities and bond us together in the development of a new identity, and could tell that from, you know, never forget the guy who said, look to the right of you, look to the left of you, one of you will not be going. That was right on day one. And I remember that one. The language training I don't remember very much of. What I do remember was Sagamore, which we went up for some weekend to be rugged and get rugged and healthy and so on. And I do remember the outdoor bowling thing. I just, you know, this is sort of this thing in mind. Wow, look at, you know, because I like to bowl, and it was outdoors and it was very cold. And and I remember a couple of the education courses. I do remember, sorry.
Go ahead.
I do remember the anthropology was great to me. I love anthropology, and that was the first time I'd really run into it. The education course, the one thing that I remember, I actually know this guy later, because I entered the field myself, but he was an absolutely terrible teacher, and he was teaching curriculum. The field is curriculum, and he would stand up at the front and talk, and all the time he was talking, he jiggled coins in his pocket. And it's those kinds of things you remember about the training. And I don't remember too much about the language training. That's interesting, but certainly anthropology.
And Virginia, looking back on our training program, did it really prepare you for what you expected or what you had to do once you got there?
Not particularly well, but I don't know how it could in that period of time. And working with the group that they were working with, one of the things that I remember about our group was that it was so culturally inner looking, that there was not a whole lot of sense of culture. And there was once a question about language in the language class, and someone said a few people had a southern accent.
Yes.
You know, and there was a there was talk about the southern accent. Mm-hmm. And the instructor said, well, now who else has an accent? And no one else said that. I don't have an accent.
Really?
Yeah. So we were very young, very naive, and there was just a lot that would have to be worked with. But one of the major problems, I think, was that there weren't very many people from Malawi or who knew Malawi in the training. So it was more general.
Yes, I remember that as well.
Right.
It was people who had been in neighboring
countries.
Right,
right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your initial entry into the country and reaction to it? Were there surprises or?
Well, lots of surprises. I thought that the Blantyre, that beautiful, what was it, site where it wasn't the offices, but where
field
we
house,
the field house,
it was
the field house, and these beautiful gardens, gorgeous gardens. But we were so exhausted. I mean, I don't know how long the flight took and how many countries we'd been in, and it was just complete exhaustion. So otherwise, leaving the field house and then seeing the poverty, you know, that contrast was dramatic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the dusty roads and so on. So, but I was all gung ho. It was fine with me.
So, can you describe the project you eventually were working in, the Peace Corps staff or physical environment that you were in?
Yeah, I was close to Blantyre, in Blantyre basically, at Henry Henderson Institute, which was it was on a mission. It was on a Presbyterian mission, but it was the first government school, secondary school, and it was not a boarding school, and so it began. It sort of grew up over a couple of years. When we got there, it was only grade 8 and 9, and then the next year was going up two grades at a time because they were building at the same time. So they were building the classrooms.
Mm, that's unusual.
At the same time, and so they were bringing in more and more classes of kids as we went through this. The faculty was primarily Peace Corps. It had been some missionaries, but they were no longer involved in it. The missionaries were a little upset with us coming in. I was going to be the English teacher, and they said this to the students. In the year before we came, they said, there's no way that they can teach you English because they don't speak English.
Really?
And so we had a few things that we had to fight in going into the classrooms. In terms of our own legitimacy and our, particularly for teaching English.
And you had to learn to spell a few of the words the British way.
Well, I'd already done that.
Yes.
In Canada.
Oh, correct. Oh, so you were ahead of the rest
I
of
was
us.
Ahead of it, and yes, we went from Z to Z to Z to...
So can you give an impression about the students that you were teaching?
This was as close to an urban high school that we had in Malawi at the time. It was, I think, in comparison to other places, it was a rough, tough group. There were discipline problems. And we found out later, smoking problems, nyanja problems. They smoked grass before they came to school very often. Or in the middle of the day.
Wow.
So it was something of a surprise for me. I was teaching at the lower level group. I was teaching the lower level groups, and everything was fine. But once I had to take over in David's class, and it was an absolute disaster. I mean, the guys in the back started making animal noises and banging their desks, and the principal came in, and he took them all out, and he cut a switch, and he beat them all, one after another.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, I mean, this was, everything about it was difficult for me. I mean, the discipline aspect, but then the physical punishment for everybody, you know, and they hadn't all. But yeah, so that was the nature of the group. It was a tougher group, I think, than other places.
Do you think they were smoking because they didn't have food to compensate?
No, I think I didn't think that at all. I thought that it was. this is a group, and this is what they did, and they...
Did you teach only English?
No, I taught math and English and sewing and netball, and I ran the library. And we always taught in the evenings. We taught English classes, not to our students, but
right, night school. Called it.
We had night school. We did that all the time, which was there was your major challenge, and with 150 students in one classroom, you know, that kind of thing. No textbooks, so we did work hard. We worked really hard.
I know.
And but
what were
never
your
complaining.
Conditions like?
Very nice. Much better than I would have expected. It was a lovely little brick house. It had parquet floors. I remember
really?
Somebody, I think it was Soapy Williams, came to our house. I think it was Soapy. And looked down and said, "Nicely packed mud."
Really? We had cement floors.
And that was only just the parquet floor was in the living room. Mm-hmm. So, and it was we had a little garden. We actually grew vegetables, and we had a, in quotes, house boy. I can't believe that we would call him that, a house boy. This is a guy who had about three wives and lots of kids. And
that's what everybody called them, houseboys and cooks or gardeners.
Right. So, it was good living and lots of good people around us, too, which was very nice.
What were the other staff like? You said
we had, and
staff?
The others were, there were a couple of African teachers. The headmaster was African, who was well-educated, had been tied into a family of well-educated people in Blantyre. And he had to leave at the attempted coup because his family was involved in the attempted coup. So overnight we lost our principal. He had to go to another country. And that was a deep blow to the school because we were constantly fighting. This school was considered to be the lowest of the low. And we were constantly fighting to prove that it wasn't the students and the faculty. And then we also had a couple of regular African teachers, one of whom became the principal and headmaster, and he did a very good job too. So
great. Can you tell a little bit about the coup?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't too long after independence. We knew it was coming. The Peace Corps knew it was. Peace Corps people knew it was coming. It was in the sort of bush talk, as we called it. And the consulate did not know. We were just absolutely shocked that the consulate didn't know, and had no interest in asking the Peace Corps about anything that was Peace Corps volunteers about anything that was going on. I thought that the consulate was so separate in that country from both what was going on in Malawi and with something like the Peace Corps. I mean, we were prime people for knowing things that they could have found out from us. There was an attempted coup to take over from Banda. They had a lot of people had felt that Banda was only going to just get the country going, and then there would be somebody else, one of the younger people, that would take over. And of course, Banda started talking about being life president forever kind of deal, and so there was that attempted coup, and it was very hard for us in Blantyre, just because we were surrounded by it and lost a couple of teachers and the headmaster and good friends, people that we had gotten to know, had to leave the country.
Were there other notable events in the time you were there?
Well, the independence was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. That was just a lot of fun. And notable events in terms of
health problems, vacation, travel.
Yeah, well, there was one that I that connects me to the doctor, and that was that we did a lot of cooking, and I learned how to cook in Malawi. And when people would say, "How could you do that?" and in actual fact, in order to cook in Malawi, you had to go back to absolutely bare bones. You know, you couldn't get anything that was halfway done, or so you really had to get into the theory of the food and the cooking. And I just enjoyed doing that a lot. Well, I forget what it was that I cooked, but David swallowed a peppercorn, but it didn't go all the way down. It got lodged in his breathing, but he could still breathe a little bit. And so we got in this car, drove around to try to find Dr. Davis, who is in the movie theater, watching a movie. And so we went in and got him, and he came out, and we went to his office, and you know, he reached down and got this thing out. I mean, this was
amazing.
An amazing event, and wonderful that this could happen. So,
did you take any vacation time or
travel? Oh, lots. We did a lot of travel. Actually, we did a lot of travel. We had a big trip to South Africa, Southern Rhodesia and South Africa, that was wonderful. That was with Jim and Bernie and Bob and Michelle. And it was a wonderful trip. We learned so much about South Africa. We were so happy when we left. In so many ways, it was just a militaristic country at that point. And it was, you know, and then we traveled through Mozambique. We got on a boat and went down the coast of Mozambique. We had long weekends up at Lake Malawi. So
did you try to go into where it said blacks only when it was still apartheid?
Yeah, Bob Press almost got arrested in Johannesburg because he walked out. We just got so sick of this, and he walked out of a bar and saw a couple of Africans on the corner and put his arm around them and said, "You're my friends," and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And those poor guys are looking like, "Get me out of here," you know.
They probably were terribly
And the police
afraid.
Came up. But in Johannesburg, they knew we were Americans of the bad kind from their standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And we had several incidents. I tried to buy a pair of shoes, and they couldn't bring me the right size. They'd bring me either size 10 or size 3 and then threw them down and said, "We don't have your shoes. We don't have any for you."
They were either for coloreds or for blacks, right? Not for white people?
No, they were for white people. They weren't for Americans like us.
Oh.
They knew who we were. Wow. We didn't exactly dress like, you know, everyone else in Johanna. I mean, we looked the way we looked, so.
Hmm. So at the end of your tour, what did you have a sense of achievement or failure or pluses or minuses?
Well, I think, it was, in one sense, a grow-up time for me. I was young when I went in. It was, you know, all of the stress factors would be clicking in. I, you know, got married and all this sort of stuff. I had, at certain points, I think at the coup time, actually, another health problem I had was anxiety attacks. I was hyperventilating. Had no idea what that meant, or never heard of it before. But, you know, again, Tom Davis helped out there, gave me a paper bag. so it was very much of a grow-up time for me, but what I focused so much on, I think, was culture and how one operates so differently within different cultures, including within the classroom. I actually, I had a wonderful student who had a curse placed on him by his uncle. And he just pulled away. He stopped working. He started losing weight. It was a very frightening thing to see. And I started to check with a doctor that I knew that was actually a psychologist, African psychologist. And finally, one of them said to me, go to the witch doctor down at the market, which I did. I went to the witch doctor. I gave him some money. I said, take care of this problem. And he did. So, I mean, imagine this. You operate within the norms and understandings of the culture is what we had to learn to do. And that was a great learning experience for me. And it's, affected my professional life forever, learning that about culture.
So when you left, did you have a specific plan for the future?
We knew we were going back to Syracuse. David was going back for his PhD, and I was going back to teach. And we took a long time getting there. We drove through East Africa and then went up in Sudan and Cairo and all that and did a European trip. When we got back to the States, we drove across the country and back and then drove to Syracuse and got started on our new life as I taught for only 1 year, though. I hated it.
Really?
I was teaching in a secondary school. It was nothing like the experience that I had had in Malawi. The secondary school that we worked at, we were all so much a part of. We all worked so closely together. We had a sense of autonomy in what we did and worked closely together and making the decisions about what went on there. I felt the impersonal high school, large high school in the U.S. was a terrible place to be, in addition to which they had no understanding of Africa. They said to me, oh, well, you taught in Africa, so you can teach remedial reading.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, well, not really. I was teaching the top 3% of the population, the eligible population for secondary school. That didn't. What they were seeing was African equals black.
Or stupid.
That went along with it. So there were three of us on the faculty who were anti-Vietnam, and that was all. And so we were ostracized because we talked about it a lot. And it was just not a nice experience. So I said, hey, I'll go back for a PhD, which is what I did.
So tell us what you're doing now, your present family, your work, where you live, what your interests are now.
I'm at the University of Michigan. Let's make sure that's still going. I'm at the University of Michigan, and I'm a professor of education there, and my interests are in pre-service teacher education and staff development, research on teaching, all that kind of stuff. And I remarried, and we have three boys between us and two grandchildren. I could not convince my kids to go into the Peace Corps.
Really?
I really wanted them to go into the Peace Corps because I could not imagine another experience like it.
Why do you think they turned it down?
Well, one of them, the youngest, is more like the... I mean, he did his thing. He went to Mexico City and worked with people up in the hills and did illegal things like hooking them up with electricity and stuff. He had his own...
And it's similar to Peace Corps.
Similar, very similar. Mm-hmm. And he was at Berkeley and was all involved in the food program and, cooking once a week and all that kind of stuff. So he did his thing without the structure of government.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two, I think, just sort of wanted to chug along. In so many ways, like other people. So I couldn't convince them. And I was sorry about that.
Yeah. So when you got home, tell us about your reentry.
Well, it was a terrible time. The return culture shock was desperately awful for me. One of it having to do with the high school itself and teaching in the high school with the people I was teaching with and the way in which it was organized and you know, teaching remedial reading, which I'd never, I mean, I didn't have a clue about how to teach remedial reading. But it was also the materialism was just so pronounced. Being away from buying anything for 2 years other than the basics, food, and then coming back and having, I felt like my friends, my family were just somewhere else other than where I was. And the Vietnam War, which I was so really, really opposed to, made it very difficult for me. I was engaged in Peace Corps training as well, as teaching at that point. So I was trying to train others. And I think I went into complete exhaustion. I got very sick. So it was not, the reentry was very difficult.
Wow. Have you continued any kind of involvement in the country?
No, the only thing is in Friends of Malawi, I contribute to and have kept up with certain of the people that that I was with there. I'm sure we helped. It was hard to figure that one out. We did an enormous amount. I actually studied what the Peace Corps did in terms of elementary schools in Malawi. And what happened there was that we were too successful.
Really?
And they cut us off. They cut off Peace Corps coming in for elementary. And the reason is that when you passed the exam, the elementary leaving exam, there was an expectation that you would go to secondary school. And so our passing rates were so dramatically larger, and all those people wanted to go to secondary schools, and there was no place for them. So yes, there was a definite impact of the Peace Corps, and I'm sure, you know, touching the lives of those people, of the students, wonderful students that we worked with. But there's nothing that touches me quite so much as their music.
Right.
It is a fabulous. I mean, this was the school that we were at was not a mission school, and yet each morning we met in the chapel and had prayers and we sang.
We did as well.
And it was the singing. I mean, what a way to start a day. You know, it was just so wonderful, beautiful voices. And so I think that number three was the one that I always felt was important. But I'm sure that there was a lot in terms of number one, just in terms of teaching and so on. Number two, I don't know. I think that they loved us. They were just beautiful to us. You know, they were just wonderful people, mm-hmm. and took us into their hearts and souls. I'll never forget the day that Kennedy died, and our students were weeping and hugging us, and us. So I think we did make a difference, perhaps in me. I don't know. That would have to be checked out by going and talking to the people. But a couple of the videos that we've seen, I mean, it's very clear that in our students' minds, we're still there.
I know they remember us from my travels back, and they often ask about one of the other teachers who was in our group. And very often, had no connection with the students that they had, so I can't really relate to the questions they ask me, but I know that many of them remember people in our group.
So, yes, we had an effect, but it is very good. It is very good for the USA to have this happen.